ladies and gentlemen. Comedy Film Nerds episode 263.
It's a really exciting episode. We've unfortunately, we don't have Fast and Furious 7 to talk about because we already did it last week.
Can we talk about it again? I'll talk about how much I still love it.
Okay, maybe we will. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about it.
Here's what popped into my mind real quick, real fast 7. Okay, well, we need to talk about this. Here we are. It's Tuesday. It's April 7th. Fast and Furious has already made $100 million or something. It did $67 million its first day. Yeah. And absolutely right.
They're saying it might be Universal's first like billion-dollar franchise.
Well, what I'm looking forward to is the Fast and the Furious connected universe, like the Marvel universe, and spinning off into different individual movies, introducing new characters.
Yeah.
So we expand the universe of the Fast and the Furious films.
So we can see cars go underwater.
Right.
And then cars in space.
Yeah. Yeah. Wormholes. Of course.
It's going to go off into all sorts of tangents. Fast and Furious on the moon with moon cars. First of all,
ladies and gentlemen, this Fast and Furious theorist that we have on the program, he's been on the show before, and gentlemen, Chris Gore.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
Okay, so back to your theories.
The thing is this, the connected universe is the big deal now with studios, and they're always looking for the new franchise. Why?
Not because it was a great idea, the studios, because one of them made money. So now someone else is going to come along and try it and do it incorrectly, and then blame it and say, oh, the connected universe stuff doesn't work.
Let's talk this. In all seriousness, what other franchise would you connect Fast and Furious with?
Ooh, that's really interesting. You could probably get the Expendables in there, but then probably kill them all. I mean, that would be the best.
Yes.
I mean, the Expendables, the DVD covers of all the Expendables movies pretty much looks like gay porn to begin with.
And Step Up.
Well, that's
and then add Step Up.
Well, that's my I want to do a comedy parody called Step Up and Furious, where it's a dance troupe, you know, racing cars and fighting to stop terrorists from taking down the teen center or whatever.
Right. They're
just on airplanes
and car chases, but it's always a dance car chase fight.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, that's what I want to see. And it's all of those two worlds of like, you know, the terrorist Rico who, wants to make the teen center. They're going to lose the big dance or whatever. Who cares? Like, who cares? That's what I Step Up and Furious.
You think they'll ever do a crossover Transformers Fast and Furious?
It's possible because they've said now that they want to turn Transformers into a connected universe type thing, which to me, connected universe,
what?
All connected universes really mean are, we're going to make a fuckload of sequels and spinoffs. That's all it means. It doesn't mean like, and also connected universe is not an original thing that Marvel did. It was done before. You know, if you look back to the Universal monster movies of the 30s and the 40s. And secondly, even the Toho monster films of the 60s were all connected in some way.
Right.
Right. Uh-huh. So it's not a new thing that Marvel did. They just did it successfully in the modern era. It just shows that people like long form storytelling, like our binge watching series on Netflix and whatnot, just to actually be serious about it for a second.
No, you're right.
Let's get back to fucking with it. Yeah. But still, like,
Marvel did, they pretty much took the comic book model, like everything's connected in the comic books. Let's just translate it into movies instead of just doing everything separate.
Well,
like the way DC is doing. I don't even know if you guys know this. They're going to make like a Flash movie. It's in development. But not the Flash that's on TV that they're doing right now.
Which is a great show. If you're a regular watcher of the Flash TV show, it's fantastic.
We have the Flash every week now, and it's great. Why would you now make a movie? And then also, he'll be in the Justice League with the new Batman
Marvel.
And Superman. They're not getting it. Like, there's no reason to make that film.
And why is nobody just going, we should just do exactly what Marvel's doing?
Right.
Like, in the NFL.
Right.
Like, who's won the last 5 Super Bowls? Get your fucking offense to look like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly.
Just do that. Like, I don't get this shit.
Well, I think what's going on in the studio meetings are like, we need to do what Marvel's doing, but worse.
But in a dumber way.
Yeah, but in a dumber way.
Well, the dumb thing is they don't do the tacked on endings. They didn't do one for Man of Steel. They didn't, so who knows what Batman v Superman is going to be. I mean, we are going to see the trailer now with Mad Max Fury Road. The trailer for Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice will be on that movie. It's fairly official.
And that comes out this summer, right? The May.
No, May.
Mad Max movie is mid-May,
and that's when we'll see the first trailer for your favorite character, or at least one of them, Batman v Superman. So, Graham,
May is
hold your horses here.
Our summer is front-loaded. We get Avengers and Mad Max in the same month.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts, right?
And
yeah.
I cannot wait to see. I want it. I don't know. We talked about this, and we're going to talk about this forever. But the Batman v Superman. God, I keep going back and forth, like what this is going to be.
Well, did they learn the lessons of Man of Steel? Did they look at that and go, you know, maybe it was a little too dark. Maybe it was, you know, Superman's more of a fun character.
Maybe we should give him dialogue.
Maybe we should give him dialogue. True. But like maybe did they look at that? Also, I think Ben Affleck being involved, not only as Batman, but you know he's – I'm hoping in some way he's ghost directing this movie because he definitely has developed an eye for quality. So I'm hoping that he's more involved. I salivate over every little tidbit and learn that, you know, Hans Zimmer said that Junkie XL is going to be doing Batman's theme in the film. He'll be doing the music for his whatever his theme music is. It just sounds like they're throwing everything in, and every announcement just makes me even more nervous. It's like,
I know. They have cameos by Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and now it's rumored that, you know, this new Flash character will be in too.
Right. And the only person I think that is definitively not in it is Mr. Mixoplex. The only one that's not in it.
Yeah, because you have Lex Luthor is in it too.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I don't know, man.
It's gonna be strange. I think definitely, you know, it's now less than a year until that film comes out. We've really
so
only seen the glimpses.
Start on the script.
Yeah. Now's the time, fellas.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Start writing it.
Get working on it. Now that it's shot, yeah. They should start working on that script. Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
That's, Mancini, you get me every time. Every time. Holy crap. Yeah.
All right. Well.
Okay, wait. What's that? So Fast and Furious 7.
It's great.
It's
so
like,
much fun.
Is it like, here's my thing. Is it like we were talking about before? Is it like a 5-year-old playing with Hot Wheels, but they made a movie from that plot?
Our fan Jason Christian wrote, he goes, it's a 7-year-old. It's inside a 7-year-old psyche. I mean, that's a 7-year-old.
Pretty much.
But that's everyone's saying that. That's what it is. If you're 5 to 7 years old and you're just going, and you're like, now the car can fly. And it's like,
someone filmed the male id for 2
right.
hours.
And someone
that's something that could be cool for what it is.
It is. It's really fun. It's really ridiculous. And it's the plot holes and the plot devices are so ridiculous. But what's so fascinating is you don't care.
Who cares?
You don't mind. You're just along for the ride, and that ride just takes you far from Logic
Town.
It is such
a thin line between this and then the big budget movies that are like the Transformers or the G.I. Joe
or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that we'll talk about later.
Yeah, that are so dumb and don't get it because I think those movies think they're being clever. I don't know but there's something they're just doing right, and it's got to just be.
And they're going to keep doing it.
It's almost like a millimeter difference between that makes it ridiculous fun versus ridiculous stupid.
It's camp to kitsch. It's not that far away. Yeah. I mean, they're doubling down Universal. They're building a giant, you know, part of the tram ride at the theme park. So, you know, you drive in the tram and then you're going to be racing along with the cars.
That's fun.
That's literally, they're putting so much money into it. It's going to be the finale of the tram ride now. That's the big.
So we did a Furious 7 spoiler ep with Matt Myra. It is available. Yeah. Download it. Listen to it.
Yep.
It's great.
And as of now, let's talk about Woman in Gold you got to see.
Okay, I saw Woman in Gold and we were all.
Now, I want to tell the audience here, just because they're going to think you're making it up. Ryan Reynolds and Helen Mirren are in the same film.
Yes, it's not a mistake. This isn't somebody did a edit mashup and put it online.
I think the only way I could possibly have any interest in seeing this or even enjoy it is if I imagined in my head that this was somehow the Deadpool movie, and they just haven't. He's just not in the Deadpool costume. And I think that if I can just keep that, if I keep that thought sort of floating there, that it's like, well, Deadpool looks really good in those glasses, pretending to be a lawyer. Maybe I would have some interest in seeing it.
All right.
Convince me. Graham, convince me.
I will convince you. I will convince you because I had all of those reservations. But part of me was like, it's based on a true story.
Yes.
So, and it's directed by Simon Curtis, who did My Week with Marilyn, which is a movie I thoroughly enjoyed. And the rest of the time, he's just done a lot of TV. He's a TV director, which sometimes those guys don't, they can't translate to the big screen. I like My Week with Marilyn. And this movie, you know, it's Helen Mirren, so she's great. Mm-hmm. She's great in it. Would I have cast Ryan Reynolds in this role of the young attorney who, you know, gets into it for the money, but then realizes it's more, and his great, I think great, either grandfather or great grandfather was lived in Austria and was a famous composer and all this stuff. So we've kind of, it's about his history and him going, you know, what's right, you know, what this is all about. I don't know that I would have cast in it. That being said, he does a decent job. There's a couple of scenes that stick out as a little too Hollywood cliche argument, but that,
like when he pulls out his power ring.
Yeah. And goes, I'm going to ruin this franchise. but there's a scene where he like argues with her, where it's like down, you know, cause it's this several year long, maybe 2 year legal battle and all that, you know, where's the battle going to go and all that stuff. And he has some kind of argument with her. That's just that was the one scene towards the end. I was like, oh man, this just feels like Hollywood nonsense. But I don't blame Ryan Reynolds for that. I blame a script and a director for going, we need this moment in this type of movie.
Isn't that in the screenwriting thing? That's like one of the beats is the two protagonists have to have sort of a separation so they can come back at the together at the end to then triumph and then win.
Right. It's exactly that. And you're just
a triumph of the will is what you're saying.
Yeah. Wait, no, I didn't. Oh, Chris, you fooled me. It's that where you're just like, okay, this is just paint by the numbers, and you don't need that. Because it's one of these things, like, I hate it when Hollywood does this. This is a true story. Pretty compelling. you know, you don't need to add anything to it.
You don't need to Hollywood it up.
You don't need to Hollywood it up. But they, honestly, that's a small fraction of the movie. The rest of the time, it's really good, and their scenes together are excellent. The supporting characters that they have to play the German bureaucrats and all that stuff, those are cast well. And then I got to bring up this guy's name, in Woman in Gold. So he is Katie Holmes, Max, Charles Dance. Oh, Charles Dance, you know. He's in a Charles Dance is an English, or he's from England. He's from England. So, but in this movie, American accent. And at first I was like, huh? That caught me off guard. But then he pulls it off and he plays the head of a law firm. So he does a good job. But where is
Well, Christian Bale had a Batman accent. He sounded pretty good, actually, if you ask me.
This is the guy, Daniel Brühl, who was in the movie Rush as the German dude, you know, the asshole German, and he played that
race
role,
car driver.
Race car driver. Mm-hmm. So this, he plays a young Austrian guy that's helping them out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's like, and I won't spoil this. He's like, you know, the reasons why I'm helping you are my reasons. Don't worry about it. And you find out later and it's like, wow, it's compelling and how he plays that. And you got to see this guy. This is a good young actor who, you know, you get to see his range of the dick hard ass, you know, professional athlete race car driver to this guy with some sensitivity who's trying to help them, but is like, look, guys, the Austrian government is never going to give up this painting, so we got to go at it another way or whatever. So there's really cool little moments in this film, and I like it. I liked it a lot, and I was like, well, all right, Ryan Reynolds, like maybe he's suffering you know, pre-Captain America Chris Evans disease of just getting shitty scripts, or McConaughey, you know, who just had the worst scripts given to him, but actually he has some depth as an actor. I don't know.
And then took charge of his career and started doing some amazing
things. I saw Interstellar. I'm with you.
Right. So,
okay, bad example.
but like, yeah, exactly. Like, that's what that's what Matthew McConaughey did. He just took charge of his career and he just said, I'm going to do Killer Joe and I'm going to do Mud and I'm going to do all these things.
For the for those people that don't know the actual story of this movie, here's it's stolen artwork from the Nazis, right?
Right. So Helen Mirren, this is, and she's playing an actual woman. This is a true story, who is playing Maria Altman. And there was this classic painting painted of her aunt and her...
Oh, I didn't know that was a painting of a relative.
It was a painting of a relative.
Oh, okay.
Her father was an art collector in Austria, and they were Jewish, and they paid this really – this famous guy, Klimt, it was a famous Austrian painter, I believe, to do this portrait of their aunt. And then, obviously, the Nazis came and took – the photo, and it's been, or the painting, and it's been hanging in the main museum in Austria for 50 years. And she's always like, ugh, you know, I wish I could get this back. I have no proof or whatever. And her sister, the beginning of the movie starts with her sister dying, Helen Mirren's sister dying, comes across some old letters and goes and finds some like documents, like a will or something like that. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. So then she contacts Ryan Reynolds and, hey, is there a case here? And he's like, all right, let's look into this. So it's the battle as to legally, does she have legal ownership of this painting? And the Austrian government is like, well, Klimt is our guy. This is no. And we've got paperwork that suggests this thing. And so they're trying to find a will and a note and all this other stuff to sort of solve the case. And
so it's a suspense thriller.
A little bit.
A little bit? Okay,
that's cool. I mean, it is sort of a, it isn't a suspense, but it is like a...
It's a drama.
It's like a courtroom drama.
Gotcha.
It's like a good courtroom drama.
Like I like those.
Yeah, an international courtroom drama. And you know, you Helen Mirren...
Does anybody at any point go, papers, please?
Yep, papers, please. Oh, they've got some great German bureaucrats. They've got them. Oh, man, they do a great job with that. And... she goes back to Austria, and I think the director, too, also did a nice job of the way he stylized her flashbacks. Like, when she goes back to Austria, she would kind of look into a room and see, like there's a scene where there's in this, like, outdoor plaza in Vienna, which is a beautiful city, like, outdoor coffee shop, and they're there in whatever year this was, 1998, 99 is when this actually takes place. And then all of a sudden, she sort of sees her... and her sister as kids in this, you know, so they're wearing clothes of like the late 30s or 20s or 30s or whatever. And then everyone around her is in modern clothing, but you just, that's just like, I thought the filmmaker did a nice job of sort of showing you how the human brain works in terms of flashbacks. So that stuff was cool and how they, you know, kept going back and forth and how Helen Mirren is, you know, dealing with this and Ryan Reynolds, who is Jewish, but you know, grew up in America and, you know, it's the Holocaust is just, oh, my mom wants me to make sure I see the Holocaust memorial when I go back. Like he doesn't really,
he doesn't feel a personal connection.
No, he doesn't feel a personal connection, you know, but that's sort of part of his character's arc. So right. I don't know. It's an interesting film.
It is one of those things where I look at movies like this, like I looked at that Benedict Cumberbatch film.
The Imitation Game?
Imitation Game. I look at those movies and I say, I'd really love to see a documentary that actually tells me the real story. Because then you hear how the story does get messed with, as you were kind of complaining mm-hmm. about the mm-hmm. argument right. near the end that is kind of a screenwriting required beat and right. a cliche. You don't really need that. And documentaries sometimes just spell it out better.
Absolutely.
Especially having seen that Scientology documentary recently, which I don't know if you've discussed
clear.
It.
Yeah.
Holy, have you discussed it on the show?
We have.
Oh my God. So good. Especially the footage with Tom Cruise. It's so amazing.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet, but our guest saw it and then we have a great review on the site. So it's
such a good documentary. I mean, HBO really is.
Their
documentaries
park,
are...
They're hitting them out of the park. I mean it's incredible.
Yeah. Them and what ESPN is doing for sports documentaries and what HBO is doing for everything else, like those two are just like head and shoulders above everyone right. else. Mm-hmm. But it's a great, what you're asking, it's a great thing, is this is based on an actual documentary did come out about this.
Okay, good. So the documentary already exists.
The documentary already exists, and I felt the same way of like...
And the documentary has spoilers, so yeah. Watch it.
Yeah, because when you're talking about The Imitation Game, one of the things I'd really love to know, and I don't know if we'll ever know this, is what really happened to the machine?
Like, right!
You know, that's, if you haven't seen the movie yet, it's, you know, MI6 comes in, well, we got to destroy the machine. And you never know, did they destroy it, or they keep it, or what happened to it? Did they use it to make something else? Because, you know, generally what happens is any military-type technology gets developed into consumer products often. Right. Like everything – I mean, a lot of people don't know that. Stuff like even just stereo was like first in military. It's really interesting to see what happens with that technology.
Yeah. I love – Imitation Game I thought was great. I just was annoyed at hearing that it's not historically accurate. But what I do find – fascinating is the facts of that didn't come out until years later.
Yes.
That has been kept a secret for a long time. And it's bizarre how, you know, England was able to kind of manipulate Germany in the war to their advantage by not giving up that they knew they had cracked their code. You know, it was one of the great films of last year is
how do you decide after you crack the code which, and one of the things that they had to wrestle with is which attacks do you let through and which ones do you stop?
Right.
Like which attack will tip the Germans that you know the code and which ones won't?
Yes. Yeah.
The documentary is called The Art of the Heist, The Lady in Gold. That is the documentary, which I'm now going to go watch.
Yes, right cool. Now.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, this movie is an interesting film. I think you'd watch it on a plane or something like that, and it's great, or sort of a DVD to pass the time or something like that. But I'm more curious, because this is the thing that you talk about. And I do this every time when I'm watching a biopic or whatever, a drama, as you go, did they really...
Yeah.
Did he really fight with the guy? Did he say this or did they? No, they didn't. You know, like that's the thing you want.
Hollywood drama.
Yeah. Sometimes you find out Hollywood gets it right. Like I'm blanking on it with Tom Hanks and
Big.
Yes, we know that children can
Castaway. Green Mile.
Bosom Buddies.
Joe versus the Volcano. Yeah. Watch the documentary about Joe versus the Volcano.
Bachelor Party.
Yeah.
That's a favorite of mine.
Where he plays Walt Disney.
Oh, right. Yes.
And
Dreamgirls.
Yeah. Yes, that's the one. But in real and
Saving Mr. Banks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
That's exactly right.
We would lose at trivia night. Yeah. I'm going to tell you right now, we suck.
It's not that you suck so much, you're just assholes.
Yeah. Right. Well, also, that's a weird title, too, for that movie. Save Mr. Banks. Shouldn't it be that Mary Poppins thing movie? Yeah.
The Poppins movie.
Yeah, but Poppins Disney.
But in that film, and then
Mr. Walt.
I watched like a some sort of, not a documentary, but some sort of, you know, History Channel type thing about it. And that woman was that kind of difficult and meticulous and was giving Walt Disney notes at the premiere. She's like, I have some changes. And he's like, yeah, we're at the premiere. Like, this is ship sails, kid. Like, this is how this is going down.
Yeah, but did they call it a preview screening?
Referencing something we talked about off.
Yeah. A callback for two other people in the room.
Well, we both laughed.
Yeah.
I know. It worked, buddy. It worked. Your audience of
know
two.
Your audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Standing SR, standing ovation from your two guys here. All right. So Woman in Gold, and then watch the Art of the Heist, Lady in Gold documentary about it.
And then watch Goldfinger.
Absolutely watch Goldfinger.
So we actually have a sponsor this week.
What the
yes,
fuck?
And this is one that continually sends you cool stuff that
I
use.
I love Harry's
this
razors.
This is Harry's razors. They are amazing. They're not only good razors, but they're really cheap. They have like a disruptive price. It's so cheap. And you can go to harrys.com. But it's not only that they're cheap. We're going to give you even another $5 off with the coupon code comedyfilmnerds.com. That's HARRYS.com. And enter the coupon code comedyfilmnerds and check out for $5 off. Now,
the coupon code is comedyfilmnerds.
Yes.
It's not comedyfilmnerds.com.
Right.
It's harrys.com.
Comedyfilmnerds. Yes. Yeah. Now, Graham, you use like a lot of their products. You use the blades and like the shaving cream, right?
The gel? The the razors, and I've said this before, I don't shave every day. But when I do, it's with Harry's. I have always had a kind of thick, gnarled, weird beard.
You're like Fred Flintstone.
I am like Fred
you're
Flintstone.
You're like Fred Flintstone, let's be honest.
I am the Fred Flintstone of comedians.
What?
That makes no sense. I've always had to buy, like, I'll give you an example. I was, this is going to sound like such a rich asshole thing. I was at a day spa and I needed a shave. So I used one of their, they have disposable razors for the clientele. I mean, we're not animals.
Yeah.
They're disposable razors and it's got a rotating head, two blades, and it's destroyed my face.
It like, almost ruined your spa day.
Exactly. I was like, you people are animals. Like, if you don't bring in Harry's razors to this high-end day spa, I'm just not coming anymore. Now rub my feet.
You're going to lose a customer.
Yeah, rub my feet, you savages. And bring me some more lemon water. Nobody better look me in the goddamn eye. These are other problems that don't relate to my shaving. But I did that, and I was like, that's right. I have to use nice blades, and I've had to use this for years. So I used to buy the Mach 3s. They're expensive as shit. Even like I'd get them at Costco in bulk. These razors, they sent us a sample. They're amazing. When
they make their own blades.
They make their own blades.
And here's what's crazy. Did you know they liked the blades so much they purchased the factory in Germany?
Yeah.
They just bought it.
They bought Germans.
Yeah.
So this is retribution for the woman in gold. So it all makes sense. But I'm telling you, these blades are amazing and they come in cheap. Like when the last they have an ad paid for us to do an ad read in a while. I still buy the blades and I stand by this. And when I'm going to re-up, you're goddamn right, I'm going to use coupon code comedy film nerds and save $5. They're great blades. They come in at about a lot less than they're $1.50, $1.60, something like that. Depending on how many you buy, you can buy them in bulk or whatever.
The more you buy, the cheaper they buy.
They're definitely under $2 a blade.
And you get the foaming shave gel too, right?
The shave gel is nice and the starter set. That's the other thing. If you're new to this, you get the starter set.
Right.
Got a nice handle. So now I have two handles, one in my bathroom because I shave in the shower like a man. And
one in the car.
And one in the car. When I'm shaving my legs to go to a big audition.
You know, in case the spa misses a spot.
Oh, I got to bring one out of the spa like a filthy person. Because I have a travel kit, obviously. I travel all the time. So I have two separate Harry's blades that I with me at all times.
I hope you guys are getting paid by the minute because first of all, I'm sold. Yeah. So, and I have a beard and I'm sold.
Yeah. So
shave your wife. Get it? Come on now.
Remember, polish up your man face.
Polish up your man face.
So harrys.com and enter coupon code comedy film nerds.
Save $5.
Save it.
I could talk about these all day.
Hashtag shave it.
Hashtag shave it. Hashtag polish your man face. Hashtag shave it, work it.
Harry's Razor is part of the Comedy Film Nerds Network, isn't that? It's a podcast now.
It is now, yes. Yeah.
I could do a weekly podcast about how much I love shaving.
Yeah.
I get in the shower. I get my face all nice and hot. I have a mirror that suction cups to the wall.
Oh, I thought you were kidding.
No.
But no, you were.
I could talk about this in Batman
top
all day.
Top scenes in movies involving shaving. Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters.
Tom Cruise in Top Gun. After Goose dies, remember? Right. He's there and he's shaving and Tom Skerritt comes in and goes, "Hey man, you lose guys," or whatever. He gives him that great speech. People die.
The color purple. Whoopi Goldberg.
There's a shaving scene?
Yeah, she has to shave with a straight razor and she thinks about killing him but doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow.
Let's talk
Clint
about
Eastwood in
anything.
In anything, God, it's one of them. One of the westerns he did.
Yeah. Oh.
Where he's getting there shaved. I think it's Josie Wales. He's paying for a shave, and then they come in and he starts taking guys out, blasts them,
and then finishes his shave.
Of course he does. He's not at it.
He's at a spa.
Josie Wales is at a day spa. Getting a stone facial.
Outlaw Josie Wales.
So, Chris, now we're going to talk about I don't know how to transition out of that, but that's I'm going to try.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's going to be a clean shave. Yeah. GrahamEllwood.com.
So Chris, you just came back from WonderCon. We want to talk about WonderCon, and also you have a Kickstarter right now to save filmthreat.com. Filmthreat.com, which has been a staple in the film review space for many, many years.
Right. Well, I mean, I started Film Threat magazine. It was a zine when I was in high school.
Now, why don't you explain to our listeners what that is, a magazine?
A magazine. It's like just like the internet, but on really thin slices of wood.
Yeah.
That's... what magazines used
Does
to be.
Does it have pictures?
Okay, so wait, say a wood internet? Okay, walk me through this.
It was a wooden internet. This was the pioneer, the frontier days of information being spread. But yeah, so Film Threat magazine, I started as a zine in high school, evolved into a larger magazine through the 90s. I turned it into a website in 1996, and there's 19 years worth of content on there. Now, for the last 5 years, Mark Bell owned Film Threat.
Yes.
And it was the sort of...
Because you sold it to him.
I sold it to him in a deal where he got to basically take it over for free and pay me a certain amount of money over 5 years, which just didn't work out for him. And the numbers were down. So the rights reverted back to me, whether I wanted them or not. Whether I wanted Film Threat or not, I'm now inheriting this beast. But the reality is that I supported Film Threat, you know, the whole time. I mean, through various stages in my TV career, such as it was something where I was willing to spend 10, 20 grand or more a year to just support the website, right? Because it was like, well, it's a marketing expense. You know, Graham, Chris,
as comedians,
you got to spend money. You got to spend money to do download cards. You got to spend money to travel. You got to spend money to support the marketing of your career, whatnot. So I was like, well, Film Threat kind of supports me, so I'll just throw money.
Where did a lot of it go? Was it like staff infrastructure?
I've got to well, first of all, I have to rebuild the website completely. Uh-huh. We're talking about there's 80,000 stories on the website.
Wow.
Comprising the 19 years, including all the old back issues of Film Threat. So this is something where I just had to say to myself, I cannot put my own money into this.
Right.
You know, I'm just not in a position anymore to be able to support it. So if people would like to see Film Threat return, you can contribute to the Kickstarter. Actually, if you go to filmthreat.com, it'll redirect you to the Kickstarter page. And the intention is to do several things.
One, there's only 2 weeks left.
It's looking grim, but
don't say that. Do you know where you're sitting?
Yes, exactly.
Do you know who you're talking to?
Well, yeah. I mean, you guys have done well with Kickstarters.
We were 70 grand out 3 days before.
Are you kidding me?
70 grand out, 3 days to go. And Chris and I were like, this is not happening. It's not going to happen.
What's the tipping point? What was the, the thing is, I just don't know if what I'm offering is I'm offering to bring the website back to
Graham
an app.
Threatening to hang himself on
was
YouTube.
That good? Yeah. But it's hard. You're in the middle of the campaign, like the beginning. And it's one thing that they don't tell you about doing a Kickstarter is how emotionally draining
it is.
It's 24/7. Every minute I'm not working on it, I think, what am I doing that I should be doing now?
How can I get another pledge?
I'm having a woman in gold flashback now to Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's just I'm physically drained, you know, from it. Promoting it during WonderCon, I had got Save Film Threat buttons made. I'm offering new perks. I think the perks are pretty cool. I'm offering to bring back not just Film Threat.
DVD Tuesday.
But bring back DVD. The segment was called DVD Tuesday, but the best part is, everyone, like yourself, mispronounced it.
Nice.
So the new segment will be called DVD Tuesday, which is actually not legally stepping on anyone's toes to call it that. So yeah, so I'll bring that segment back because it was the most popular segment on Attack of the Show.
Right.
And we'll see. I mean, look, I'm trying to raise $125,000. To do all of these things. It's a myriad of things. I've listed, and it's all outlined in my 3-minute video on the Kickstarter.
I actually watched it and went through. It's a very well put together video and page. It goes through, like, at first when you see him, like, oh, what does he need all that money for? And you literally break it down.
Right.
It's not just to reprogram the site, it's to bring back the show and to do all these things. And
so you're going to bring back an online show?
Like an online show for DVD Tuesday it'll basically be kind of a film roundtable with creators, critics, and comedians talking about movies. I can't think of any other shows like that, but but I, you know, yeah. So But the whole thing is that the Film Threat website was always a site that like would write about the weird stuff you'd never heard about. In fact, if you are
no bigger supporter of indie film than Film
I got to tell you,
and,
man,
and if, like, if you listen to the iPhone or Droid extra that's on this show, mm-hmm. I'm going to do a DVD's day of something that if you're okay. So if you have the app, which you got to get the app, yeah. uh-huh. you'll get the extra, but you're not going to get it unless you listen to the Comedy Film Nerds extra, right? It'll give you a taste of what I'll be doing once it relaunches.
I want to talk about I want to like to our fans who maybe don't ever remember Film Threat or didn't do it for Chris and I, you know, when
as filmmakers
and when we first got into LA and we first started doing films and taking our short films to festivals, Film Threat was sort of like our go-to. It was our Bible. It was our like. Every time you're getting beaten up by Hollywood, we would go to Film Threat, read the magazine, and then the website, and be like, "Yeah." And your film festival survival guide, which we both owned, and you know, I remember reading that well before I ever met you, and was just like, "Oh man, this was so cool." And I remember it saying funny things like, "Celebrities' heads are always larger."
Like, very true, too.
It is true. No, but that book helped.
You even went into how to get into parties.
Well,
bullshit.
I do
that's
like
not.
To give the no bullshit advice. I mean, the dumb thing is that a lot of people do. I don't, this is a weird thing with me. This is why this campaign's so tough for me. I can't fake being positive and upbeat all the time. I find that draining. What I find actually liberating is to be vulnerable and to be honest. And if I'm feeling down, I'm going to tell you guys I'm feeling down. So can I just say, I'm feeling down.
Yeah, we understand. Yeah, we went through this.
So but what I like to give is people the no bullshit. I think that one of the worst things you can tell a filmmaker is go for your dream. You should go for your dream. Mm-hmm. And you should do no. What I think really helps is hard information, being told what the realities are. And that's something that Film Threat always did. I think even for the people where, you know, we would, you know, give bad reviews to, at least respected Film Threat and respected the fact that we would say the things that other media outlets were too afraid to say
because we weren't
owned by some mega corporation.
Right.
As some outlets are owned now by
You're never going to see a hard biting review from like Entertainment Weekly because they won't get the interviews. It'll cause a ripple effect. And there was a columnist there that started doing that, had really great, insightful biting columns, and they were spot on. They were absolutely. I can't remember his name now because he was only in like about three issues and then all of a sudden he disappeared.
Right.
Because he was telling it too much like it is.
Yeah. And the thing, so all you guys out there listening, this is a cool thing to support because and just as Comedy Film Nerds, we obviously support indie film, and to have Film Threat up and running, to have you doing this online show, obviously we'd love to be a part of that, but then, you know,
you will be a guest on my show.
Yeah. We'll be a guest on your show for sure. But also like you're going to discover now that we're in this era of podcasting and everything, you're going to go, Oh guys, you need to have this filmmaker on your show, you know, because you're going to be back. Cause you really haven't been that involved in it. So you will be back involved in it again, which I think is a good thing.
You're going to make great more movie picks, like literally with not only just DVDs, but I know you'll turn people on to more indie films that they've never heard
especially
of.
Especially in this era of there's so many places to find a movie. 20 years ago, it was like there was DVD, VHS, and the theaters.
Right. And now with streaming, it's even more broad. But you do need someone, you do need an outlet to curate this stuff, mm-hmm. to look at the stuff that's at all the film festivals. And it's not always about the stuff that's coming into theaters and on Blu-ray and whatnot. There's so many other outlets, as we all know. So it's nice to be able to filter through that stuff and then support people early on. I mean, Film Threat was always the outlet where it's like, early on, the filmmakers would come to me first to get the quote. And then, of course, when they didn't need me later and they were in Entertainment Weekly, but it's, you know, there were a lot of filmmakers that broke their first media. I mean, we did a cover story on Reservoir Dogs. Yeah. Film Threat was on the set for Tarantino's first feature, you know, among other filmmakers that we supported throughout their careers. So I just love to see them give back and help support so that the filmmakers of tomorrow will get some notice.
Well, have you contacted? Tarantino must have a publicist.
I did. You know what's so funny? An ex-girlfriend of his actually contacted me and said that I should directly ask Tarantino.
You definitely should.
Well, here's my problem.
He just bought the New Beverly.
I'm so weird about asking people for help. I'm Irish.
You just started a Kickstarter. All right,
I know, and that's what you're supposed to do. You know what I've discovered from starting a Kickstarter? I'm really bad at asking for help. I'm terrible at it. I don't like to go to the doctor. I don't like to ask for people to help me move. You know what I do? I pay people to help me move. I am an idiot, and I'm a moron. So...
that's a terrible pitch.
This is awful. So I'm saying I'm asking for help.
Boy, you need to shave your face with a Harry's razor.
You need to just polish up your man
face. Polish up your man face. Use a coupon code to save $5.
Comedy Film Nerds, I'm using it. Once I start to shave. But I've got my it's I'm just saying this is difficult for me.
Well, this
because
is why
I've never asked for this kind of help before, I've helped so many people with their Kickstarters.
Honestly, Chris,
will you tweet this for me, Chris? Of course.
This is one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on, is because I knew that about you.
Yes.
And I actually, when Chris sent out the email and I saw it there, and I'm like, why isn't he asked to be on the show so we can help him out with this? You know what?
I'm embarrassed to ask.
I'm like, let me email Chris and like, I know you're doing this Kickstarter. Come on, let's help you out and let's get some of the comedy film.
Well, thank
you.
Don't be afraid. Like what we did in that last 3-4 days was
did you do it?
We got on the phone.
Called people.
We called some people. We called in some big donors and we know you
think 10 grand is the most you can give on Kickstarter?
Yeah. But also, it was a matter of promotion, too. Everyone from Aisha to Doug, everyone helped out with that last-minute push.
But the thing is, too, what happened was all of a sudden we got one or two big donations. So then everyone went, wait a minute.
This could make it.
Everyone who was sitting on the sidelines went, well, shit, maybe my $50 will help.
And then it springs. Then all of a sudden, all the little ones start coming in more because now it's not a waste of time.
Because when they see a big jump, when they see a $10,000 jump, they go, ooh.
Well, let me invite everyone to a party. I'm having a party, and one of two things is going to happen at this party. We will be celebrating that Film Threat got funded and the Kickstarter worked, or we will be
live suicide.
We will be talking. We will be discussing the death of Film Threat, and in my opinion, the death of indie film. And this party
will be hosted by IndieWire.
You're all invited. Sponsored by Harry's Razor. It's actually going to be at Meltdown Comics. Tuesday, April 21st, from noon to midnight, there will be drinks, there will be fun, lots of guests, and it's all going to be live streamed on the internet.
Really?
We're also going to be using Periscope, so I'll be doing some little Periscope drops. So for the last 12 hours of the campaign, it's going to be all hands on deck. It's going to be a reunion of tons of people involved with Film Threat. All the old writers. So the Facebook invite goes up this week. I'll be inviting select people. I would love to have you guys get on the live stream and chat. So it's going to be from noon to midnight. Meltdown Comics is going to be open. We're doing a big party.
Hey, I have an idea. Why don't we record a podcast?
Why don't you record a Comedy Film Nerds episode there?
Hold on. I have a show that night in Eugene, Oregon.
Well, then you won't be there. Actually, what you could do is you could be on Periscope. Have you seen that Periscope app? Oh my gosh, you got to check out this app.
So I will video stream at any point during that day.
No, but what's cool is you can you download it. It connects to Twitter, and what it does is it allows you to live stream from anywhere. So if you could just say, hey, I'm in Eugene, Oregon. I'm right here, right now. And you're actually on video talking to people via this app. It's insane. It's awesome. So we're going to be doing so I'm on Periscope under my name, That Chris Gore. Mm-hmm. But April 21st, Tuesday, noon to midnight, Meltdown Comics. It's going to be insane. And it's going to be a reunion. I expect most people are probably going to show up in the evening, to be quite frank. It's going to be more like 6 or 7 p.m. That's when it's going to be the main crush. But
earlier. Kids are in school.
Right,
I'll do the dad time.
Do the dad time. But I'll need someone because I'm not going to be able to handle 12 hours. I need other people to take on the mic and whatnot. But it's going to be pretty exciting. And that'll be for the last 12 hours of the campaign. It's really and I'm going to see if I can call. And I appreciate the advice. Calling in some big guns and some big some big drops in there. Will be a huge help. So we'll see. I've never,
Let me give you another piece of advice too. Have some rewards that you can only get at this party.
Oh, that's interesting.
That, you know, for people to go and can actually, you know, you'll have a turn. You'll have a
you can add new rewards in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, you could add ones. Or you could put it, you know, you could have a special one, right? Like a custom reward you could put in, but then somebody gets there, you give them a special one, then they go on the laptop or whatever, and they donate right to Kickstarter at the party.
Right. Well, I mean, the one thing you will get is I had 500 of these Save Film Threat buttons, and you can see a picture of it at if you look on Twitter, at Film Threat, you'll see.
How about for $1,000 they can be a guest on Comedy Film Nerds?
How about that? Oh, okay. Wow, for real?
Right now.
Okay, yeah. Good. All right, good. I'll put that in.
1,500.
All right. 15. It's just one. There's just one.
Chris is kind of a hard ass, but all right.
Yeah, well, no, we'll do 1,000.
1,000, okay. Yeah. I'm adding it.
For $1,000.
Tweet from the Comedy Film Nerds account and see if anyone bites, and I'll retweet, of course.
But let us know when you put that in your Kickstarter, and then we'll tweet that.
Yes.
All right.
$1,000, you get to be a guest on this show.
All right. Fantastic. Yeah. Okay.
See
cool.
you go. See you.
Done.
See you.
Look, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I'm fairly optimistic. I'm fairly optimistic. It's and there's also some other
$5,000. You're a guest, and we get to set you on fire.
That's weird. So yeah. So I think that party is going to be. It's going to be. Yeah,
but not impossible.
No, but I appreciate you guys having me on just to talk about it. And I hope
there's a lot of favors you can call in too. Just and even people not giving you big sums of money. Maybe you got some big filmmaker who's got an autograph.
Maybe James Gunn.
Of course. Whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've known James Gunn for a while. But see, this is me being like, I know lots of people.
Call in the phone.
I am one of those cringe about inconveniencing someone.
Why don't you have Mark Bell do it then?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he'll do it.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, you gotta call in these favors. You have to. It's the only way to get to that goal.
And people want cool shit.
You
man.
Gotta
give
understand
them cool
too,
shit.
Is you know, all the people that were with you at the beginning, they don't forget.
Yeah.
I mean, they're happy to help you out. You know, I definitely get in touch with them.
Because maybe someone's got a cool tier they could offer.
I mean, James Gunn might have some crazy swag from Guardians that could be in its own reward.
It's a $5,000, $10,000 reward because he's going to give you the blah, blah, blah from Guardians.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. That's good. I like this thinking. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
It's what we love doing.
And I also love coming here. This is like one of my – because this is my third time now on this podcast.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite – when you ask me, I'm like – I just love talking movies. And I also love like blowing because we all have different areas of knowledge, right? You know, we can't know and see everything. So it's always fun to come here and kind of hope I'm going to blow you guys away with some weird thing that I know.
Always happens.
And I guarantee if you have the app and you listen to the extra for this week, I'm going to blow your mind.
Yes.
So it's a plug for the app.
Do it. Work it.
Work that app.
So now let's talk about coming out on DVD and Blu-ray. Now, I want to talk about this movie because I finally saw it on DVD. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the remake. Produced by Michael Bay, but not directed by Michael Bay. But now Graham just left the room. So...
Well, this is the thing. I have not seen this, but I'll just say I have only heard the worst about this movie from everyone.
You know what's fascinating, too? And I read some of these reviews, and I remember saying, well, it's better than the Transformers movies. But you know what? Is polio better than cancer? What?
What?
Oh my God! How are you comparing it?
But sometimes when you heard something is bad over and over and over, and then you finally see it, is it bad?
I went in with an open mind because I'm a big Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan. I thought, you know what? Maybe they got a few of these things right. Maybe they did because Michael Bay maybe just produced it, supervised the visual effects, or whatever. No, they got it wrong. And one of the reasons is basically because Michael Bay is producing. And he did what he does with all of his movies. He literally sucks the charm out of everything. Like, anything that was cool or interesting is gone. Like, everything from the design of the turtles. Like, this hyper-realistic, weird, like, you know, almost like human faces with human teeth. Like, I'm like, what are you doing? They're turtles. You know, you don't have to make them look all weird. And I go back to, like, the one where Jim Henson's Creature Shop made the Turtles, the original New Line movie, and it was so much more charming and interesting and funnier. Does it hold up? Not really. But you could see the intention, especially when it came out. I think it was early 90s. So this movie, it did... it was one of those movies where you're watching and you're like, oh, no one gave a shit. No one cared about this movie. No one cared about the franchise. It was just, you know, a big budget blockbuster, shovel it into the summer, grab any IP you can, make it, and get rid of it. And that's exactly what happened. You know, it came out. It didn't do well, although it was weird. Like, they had these weird cameos. Like, Whoopi Goldberg is in it. Like, she's April O'Neil's boss.
Excuse me. Oscar winner.
Yes.
Whoopi Goldberg was in it.
Yes. She's in two scenes, and I will say she was kind of funny. But this movie did.
Host of The View.
Host of The View, yes. So when you look into this movie, and when you're watching this movie, you're thinking, okay, well, maybe they'll be funny. Maybe there'll be some funny lines because it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. How could you get every part of that wrong? And like it was like this weird dumb jokes, and then a couple creepy jokes. Like they first see April O'Neil was Megan Fox, and one of the turtles goes, "Oh, my shell's getting tighter." Like he has an erection. So I'm like, these are the jokes you're making? Okay. And then I'm thinking, of course, in logic land, I'm thinking, okay, if you were a mutated turtle, would you find a human female attractive? Granted, you can't really go there for that movie. But one of the things that really struck me about this film is how much money was spent literally on nothing. It was all about, like, effects and set pieces and action, and it was all flat. It was how can we make another building blow up? It looked like you were watching outtakes from Transformers, and then they just, you know, keyed in like the turtles onto these scenes. Like a good example is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles tend to know how to fight. That's one of the charms of watching them, right? Take on a horde of guys, mm-hmm. The Foot Clan. So there's one scene where they all come out of an elevator into a warehouse full of guys with weapons. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a really cool beatdown. They go back into the elevator and go back up, so you don't even get to see them martial arts fight. It's unbelievably ridiculous. And then you have Shredder, who's supposed to be the big villain that fights the turtles, and it goes back to history in Japan and good and evil and all of the Eastern philosophy. And what they do instead is they make Shredder a transformer. They just give him like a bunch of armor that's completely mechanical and so basically he's a robot that is now fighting the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which completely gets rid of any type of martial arts philosophy at all. Because even when you have a villain in martial arts movies, Graham, as you know, the villain still wants to express and his dominance over the hero by physical prowess. I can beat you with my martial arts. I can beat you with my strength. I can beat you with my fighting. But when you take all that away and you just put him in like a robot suit, it doesn't matter. And then what they did after that is they made the turtles bulletproof. So then all of a sudden, all the guys with guns, it didn't even matter because they were all bulletproof. And I thought, oh, well, maybe it's just the shell. No, they go, no, we're completely bulletproof. Why? Then of course, at about halfway in, I'm like, why am I watching this movie? I was really disappointed because I thought Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles could have been a really cool remake. Like, let's say James Gunn had made a remake of Teenage Mutant.
Well,
Ninja
that's
Turtles.
The one thing that would.
How cool would that have been?
With Guardians, he cared about those characters.
Exactly.
And also, James Gunn had experience with digital characters before,
yes.
In the Scooby-Doo films. So he's had experience with effects and actually making. This is a character. This is a real thing. Rocket Raccoon felt real. Groot felt real. I mean, those characters had as much depth as. Anyone else in the Guardians.
Characters.
Yeah.
And this would, it just felt like everyone literally walked through it. Nobody cared. Everyone just threw a bunch of money at this franchise. And does it make more sense? And is it more coherent than the Transformers movies? Like I said, yeah, but so what? It's still a bad movie. It doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, they hired Jonathan Liebsman to direct it, who's done such amazing films as Darkness Falls, Texas.
Did he do the Underworld movies?
No, he did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, okay. The Killing Room, Wrath of the Titans, and then Battle Los Angeles. Battle Los Angeles is the best movie out of that
bunch. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Wow. And that movie was weird. It was like a video game commercial that was 90 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because exactly. These video game commercials you see these days, there was one for Halo recently, you're looking at going like, what movie is this that I'm going to go see? Because it looks epic. Uh-huh. The ones for Destiny, these video game commercials now are as
they
epic
look like
as
movies.
They look like movies. Uh-huh. So Battle Los Angeles looked like one of those commercials. Ultimately a worthless you know, thing. When you got to the end of that movie, it was kind of pointless, the whole thing. It was just fun to see Santa Monica get the shit blown out of it. It was like, oh my God, that's that street, that's my hair. I'm like, I know those legs. I used to live on the West Side, so I'm like looking at it going like, this is pretty cool. But that's no interest to anyone else who didn't live in the area.
So, and it had this weird thing where it was like, it's a PG-13 movie, so it's kind of too violent for kids, but then too dumb for adults. So it's like this movie,
it's a sweet spot.
Made a movie for no one. No one. There's no one that can enjoy this film.
All right.
Yeah. So I am sorry to say again, because it's a wasted opportunity. This
Let's get another DVD pick. Most Violent Year. Now, Chris, you saw Chris Gore. You saw
this. Yes. Yes. Really enjoyed it. It's also great to see, sort of like knowing what's coming up with Star Wars Episode 7.
Uh-huh.
It's great to see Oscar Isaac in a leading role.
Yeah,
he's really good. It just gives me so much hope for this new trilogy of Star Wars films.
Well, this is the odd thing about this movie was its release date. It came out in January. It felt like they had first made it as, oh, this might get some Oscar, but then... So what happened? Like, why is this? Why did it get that release date? Why did it?
It's weird because it's a smart. It's almost like the anti-Godfather in the sense that, like, Oscar Isaac is trying to do everything by the book. He's trying to not be drawn into the criminal world that the trucking business apparently is so entrenched in. Yeah, exactly. Right. So I love, like, the style of it, the act. It was just so, you know, there was a tension throughout, and him just trying to avoid, like, the district, you know, all the lawyers from the city that were trying to take him down and just find any shred that he was horrible. He was just trying to do the right thing. So it's sort of like the flip of that, of a mob movie in a sense. And so I love that aspect of it. You saw it, right? I mean, you guys both
saw it. No, I never saw it.
Oh, you guys haven't seen it? Okay.
It was one of those movies because it was an Oscar film.
It was an Oscar film. I mean, because it came out like just, it's one of those things where like it came out in January in wide release,
right.
But it came out actually in December when it needed to for Oscar consideration.
For qualification.
But yeah, Oscar Isaac's character is just trying to make a deal to expand his trucking business, but it's rival trucking companies that are you know, battling for turf, so to speak. So
Chastain, I would imagine.
Oh God, she's so good in it. As his wife in the film, and she's sort of like the Lady Macbeth that's trying to draw him into, like, look, the only way to succeed is to really go to the dark side, so to speak, to basically involve yourself in crime. And he's like, this cannot stand. So it's the conflict with his wife, where he's trying to battle her, like, no, I can do this all legal, by the book, on the up and up. And so it's just fascinating to see the sort of moral, it's all this moral struggle with him and him, like, you know, you see the what he has to actually deal with, because you see that these truckers are so scared because they're being attacked by rival trucking companies that they arm themselves. And he's saying, no guns. You know, we don't want – that's just going to lead to something. If you have a gun, the other guy has a gun, someone's going to get shot. If you don't have a gun, the other guy is committing a crime. You're not committing a crime. So it's fascinating to see it. So it's kind of a really anti – That's why it's weird that it's called The Most Violent Year. I mean, there's violence in it. There's horrible violence in it. But it's
not a crazy violent movie, right?
It's not a crazy violent movie, but it's like this whole thing of like, well, what if you had the opportunity to make the right choice? What if Michael Corleone had actually gone the path of being a good guy rather than getting drawn into his father's business? And that's kind of what this grapples with.
Why do you think this didn't? I mean, aside from the obvious answer of why it didn't get Oscar consideration, is maybe they just didn't have the marketing budget.
It's anything like that. You know, some good films get lost in the shuffle. I mean, this is definitely one of those.
But they made a put that – that's the thing that's so curious to me, is they did the limited release in December to try to get consideration. It's got all these heavy hitters, Jessica Chastain and Oscar. I mean, these are, you know –
It never seemed to connect, though, with audiences.
You're absolutely right. It just didn't connect. It didn't, and there are other things that are just, you know, in the zeitgeist and that are more socially relevant. For example, Benedict Cumberbatch, An Imitation Game, and whatnot. I think that resonated more. They're just movies that resonate more. This did not resonate. Doesn't make it any less of a film. It's also a film that, if I were doing my DVD Tuesday segment, I would say that this is a rent, not a buy. So it's something that you should seek out and you definitely should see it, but it really is all about the performances. It's really about Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaac. It's not and that seeing that sort of like the flip of that we've seen the mob movies before.
Sure.
We've seen those get cliche. This is a flip of the cliche. So
they should have marketed it that way.
Yes, they should
have. I had no idea.
You had no idea, yeah.
Until you just said
he's trying to be a good guy. He's trying to not be bad. And
they should have called it a less violent year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I don't
know. But I never got the impression from the trailers or from the title.
Of course, they're going to play up. They're going to play up the exploitation aspect, which is violence and Jessica Chastain being, you know, and no matter what he does, he's trying to like, you know, stay the good path.
That they took they took that sort of cliche marketing tact is probably, I mean, for me. And maybe you too.
Yeah, I would have.
It just made it look like any other movie in that genre. Like, I would have another crime film. Mm-hmm. Another crime film. It's not just another crime film. But it really is. It does also feel like one of those movies that was made in the 70s, like the John Cassavetes.
Yeah.
Very built on performance and tension and kind of winding you up for big scenes. So because I think it had that kind of tone, it's not going to resonate with a broader audience, but certainly with anyone that's like, I mean, look, if you're looking forward to Star Wars Episode 7, if you're like me and you have watched the television show Girls on HBO because Adam Driver is in it and he plays Kylo Ren, the evil Sith Lord in Episode 7, The Force Awakens, the new Star Wars movie, you will also enjoy Oscar Isaac in a most violent year where I think his character in Star Wars is Damon Poe. I don't, you know, these names mean nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Kylo Ren, Damon Poe. I have no idea what they sound like Star Wars names, I guess. But
now if you saw Adam Driver.
I'm going to Star Wars Celebration in like a week, so
nice.
I'm super excited to go to that.
Now, if you saw Adam Driver, though, at a film festival, how big would his head be?
It'd be pretty big. I don't know. That guy seems big. Is he like 6'2"? I mean, he seems like a larger dude. Right.
He was in Tracks too.
He's in that movie I really want to see with Ben Stiller, directed by Noah Baumbach. Have you guys talked about that one yet?
No, yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Oh my God, I'm dying to see it. I heard Ben Stiller on another podcast, and he was talking about the movie, and I like Noah Baumbach. I like Squid and the Whale. I think it's a great underrated film.
What's it called? Happy Valley?
No. No.
What are you looking at?
I'm just looking at the next movie we're going to talk about.
The next movie is Happy Valley. That's the next movie. Anyways.
No, pull that up because I was looking at that too.
What is it?
The new Ben Stiller movie.
Yeah, directed by Noah Baumbach.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember the name, but it's really interesting because the premise of it is it's this couple, Ben Stiller and his wife, and they're like in their 40s.
They try to regain their youth
with a younger couple. Meet this this is the cool thing about it. So Ben Stiller is this character who's a documentary filmmaker, and he has a crew, and they've got all this equipment and all this stuff. And it's like Adam Driver and his wife – they're in their 20s and they just have all this vitality in life, and Ben Stiller have all of their friends are in their 40s. They're all kind of beaten down by life and whatnot. So Ben Stiller's this documentary filmmaker, and Adam Driver's like, yeah, I make movies too. And then he makes them all on his iPhone. And they get
tons of
views on YouTube. Yet, like, Ben Stiller's like this guy that can only do it like this other way, the more expensive way. It's just really funny, like, to see
while
that.
While we're young is what
while we're young. So, you know what? I've convinced myself. I will go see that in the theater this week.
Directed by Noah Baumbach.
Yeah, I really like Noah Baumbach.
Right. And Happy Valley is the other DVD.
Yes.
That's,
I have not seen it. Who's seen it among us?
Happy Valley is...
Is Happy Valley PTA? Is that a different movie?
You know what? Is this the Penn State documentary?
Yeah.
That's what...
Observes the year after Pennsylvania State, the Sandusky arrest and the child. Oh, I'd like to see this. I'd like to see when that happened, and it was clear that the fans of that school were more cared more about football than show you how out of whack that was.
Well, I feel like when you see a documentary like that clearly is going to depress you. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very sad, and you're going to see things that are tragic, and you're going to have empathy for all the real people whose lives were devastated and affected by it.
You got to be ready for it.
You got to be ready for it. And one of the upsides of seeing a film like that, if I might suggest, is that you can look at that and go, holy shit, my life is not that bad. This is going to... So it's, in a sense, it's a feel-good movie because it will make you look at your own life. Whatever your problems are nowhere near as bad as the people in this documentary, which is the reason I watch depressing documentaries.
The director, Amir Bar-Lev, has done a bunch of docs. He did The Tillman Story, which is an excellent documentary that we talked about on this show when it came out.
I have seen it. That's a great doc.
Yeah, that's a great documentary. So I'm – when this whole – I don't know if I can see this documentary because
really,
when this shit happened, I was so enraged. And then the
I'm from Pennsylvania. I was like, oh, I performed at Penn State, so I'm like, oh my god, what's going on?
When what's his name? The head coach got fired, and the fans and the students rioted, and I was just like watching this on TV, going, I'm sorry, what? And then when all of this came out, and people were like, you know, the investigators were like, this football program should be shut down. And people were like, you can't do that. It's not fair to the people. And what about the economy of Happy Valley? I don't give a fuck. Like, what do you, like, I went to school, University of Arizona, and Lute Olson was a god, right? He was the basketball coach. He got us to the Final Four, won a championship. And I, you know, I went to all the games, and I was just watching Arizona in the tournament this past, you know, week or two. And if I found out that one of his assistant coaches, this story came out, I would have burned my fucking Arizona shit in the middle of campus.
Well, it's weird how many stories have come out. I mean, first of all, it's
and then the free report where it's like,
right,
13 years Paterno, there's emails of him going, well, we can't let this affect the program. Knew about it.
Right.
Didn't care that boys were. I mean, like, it was just like, you also fuck too. Off.
It's even like a false argument. Like, when it comes out, I'm like, no, you could fire and clean house. You could fire everyone and still have a football program.
Yeah.
You're not going to lose a sport.
Yeah, I don't think you need to lose the football program, but you certainly, yeah, the people that are involved made, right, bad choices. That guy, right, should have been in jail years ago rather than destroying the lives of who knows how many young boys.
Exactly.
And also, like, as a father, you know, I look at something like that. It's the only thing that would drive me to think about murdering another human,
yeah,
being, yes, would be someone doing that to my kid.
Yeah.
Is like, yeah, I would think about going to that dark place.
Everybody, like the other assistant coach, I saw him doing it, but I didn't know what to do.
Well, that guy, I remember seeing interviews with that guy. Yeah, it was horrifying. So,
ugh,
yeah. So Happy Valley, it's out on DVD? Is it on Netflix or anything else?
It's out on DVD.
Streaming, all that stuff?
I'm not sure. I know it's out on DVD. So where else it is, I would look for it. Because
I'm going to look for it. I'm taking this paper, by the way. I'm taking this with all the notes.
And then
on it.
Again, if you haven't seen it already, the Tillman story is a great documentary.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not often that we see sports fans act like assholes. It's very rare occurrence.
Especially in Philly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, all this stuff has come out with the NCAA, which I'm surprised. Like, I think it was the John Oliver show. SNL even did a sketch really talking about the exploitation of NCAA basketball players. These kids that get these so-called free worthless college,
right,
and then they can't be paid and they can't actually receive any upside. Right. I mean, it's unbelievable and just unconscionable, all this stuff. I'm just glad it's coming to light. I also foresee no change whatsoever.
None.
Because what's involved is the almighty buck.
Yeah, right. Billions of dollars.
Is there, right, money involved?
Billions of dollars.
Correct.
So premiering this week, The Longest Ride. If those of you are thinking, God, I wish there was another movie based on a Nicholas Sparks novel. How much longer am I going to have to wait for another movie from a Nicholas Sparks
novel? The lives of a young couple intertwined with a much older man as he reflects back on the lost love while he's trapped in an automobile crash. Oh, come on, man. Does he turn into a wolf or a vampire? Like,
So I think he even helped write the screenplay on this one, too, or it was just based on his book.
George Tillman Jr. directed it. Craig Bolton and Nicholas Sparks, based on the Nicholas Sparks.
I'm good with never seeing that movie.
Yeah.
This is something I couldn't watch on a plane on an international flight.
Right.
You know what,
right,
I mean? Like, I've got 7 more hours. I've already flown for 5 hours, and I've got 7 more to fly, and I still couldn't watch this goddamn.
What you would
movie.
Do is you would actually turn the screen off and watch that for 7 hours.
Yeah, I'd look at a blank screen. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna look at a blank screen.
I would watch Pixels before I would watch that.
Wow.
Have you seen that trailer?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, it was a really cute short film that Sony bought the rights to turn into now an Adam Sandler vehicle. Ooh. You know? I mean, it's bizarre to me. And it looks dumb. I mean, like,
horrible.
The trailer,
horrible.
It's like, yes, you've ripped off Ghostbusters and you've made it with video game characters. I hate this already.
But here's the thing. The video game characters that we like.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
We don't want to see people Pac-Man killing people.
Yeah.
So we talked about it on Tom Merritt's podcast. Right. Yeah. It was. It looks horrible. So next movie, I cannot wait to see Ex Machina.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
Wow. This looks absolutely fantastic.
This is Alex Garland.
Yes.
Who's? Oh my god! That guy. He is capable of smart sci-fi, which is much needed. So and also Oscar Isaac is in it along with another guy. I can't pronounce this guy's name.
Domhnall Gleeson.
Mm-hmm. And Domhnall Gleeson is also in Star Wars. I'm trying to connect everything to Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, because I'm such a Star Wars nerd.
But it looks absolutely fantastic, and it looks like smart, really smart science fiction. And unfortunately, it looks like we're getting the smartest science fiction in the lower budget realms.
Right.
Like you would, like the, you know, you can have a high budget smart sci-fi movie. I mean, that's not true. We just had Interstellar.
Because
so.
Right.
But it's that kind of thing. You have that science fiction vision that on a lower budget, but this movie looks amazing. It raises large questions.
I think it's that thing that talked about in the episode with Jim Bruce, where he said constraints are good, and I think a sci-fi movie with an endless budget, they get all wrapped up in the let's how cool it's going to look and the computer.
Avatar.
You have Avatar and versus like we don't have the money for the big budget, so we better make the story solid.
Yeah, and spend it all on the robot, but the rest of it's going to be a cabin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like let's spend it and also let's have it rooted in science.
Yes,
and do what like you say, what good science fiction does is ask all these questions of like, oh, what does the future hold, and all this other stuff, and that's why you look at this and go, right on, man.
What if, and then what would happen next?
Yeah,
that's what great mm-hmm. science fiction asks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
no, that one is I'm there.
And this is now. Let's talk about released a little bit, because this to me is the perfect movie to release simultaneously on demand and in theaters. Like, I don't think I need to see this on a big screen. Like, if this came out right on Friday on demand, I'd be buying it immediately and watching it at home.
Well, I mean, not to bring it back to Star Wars again, but you heard the big announcement yesterday, right?
Mm-mm. No.
Oh, all the Star Wars movies are going to be available on iTunes, Vudu, all digital formats in HD. With extras, including new extras you've never seen before.
So that's finally happened.
Press release went out yesterday. It's funny because on the Disney Anywhere app, you can get 5 of the 6 Star Wars movies because Fox owns Star Wars A New Hope, Episode 4, the very first Star Wars movie, technically. But you can buy them. You'll be able to buy Star Wars, all of the movies with new extras on iTunes and all digital formats this Friday, April 10th.
Wow.
Now, Are these also the...
Not to screw up your outline here, but that's kind of big news.
Now,
so,
but also, I heard Disney was going to release them. Are these the completely...
These are the special editions.
Special editions. Now, I heard the unedited ones, the original ones, are coming out too.
My understanding is those will never be released. As part of George Lucas's deal with Disney, he never wants to see the original theatrical versions of Star Wars.
I may disagree with you there. I thought I read a press release saying that they would come out.
No, there's never been an official press release about that. That's always been fan speculation and fan wish fulfillment. It's not been announced. My understanding is that internally, look, it's not that Disney does not want to do this.
Yeah, I heard they're going to be on Blu-ray.
They do want to do this, but they're actually still, they're doing 4K versions. So just to remind you, I don't know how many times I bought Star Wars because I bought it on VHS in a box set and then a widescreen VHS and then the special editions. But anyways, and Laserdisc so.
Laserdisc too, huh?
Yeah, I actually have the Criterion Laserdisc Definitive Collection box set, which actually has the original theatrical cuts, but there's even like mistakes in those that are different and it's little minor cuts and changes.
So,
but George Lucas is actually working on the 4K versions. So I know you don't own a 4K TV yet or an 8K TV, but you're going to someday and you're going to have to rebuy everything again.
Wow. Well, my
because these are only in 1080p.
Now, everyone Go to the message boards and let us know what you think about all the different Star Wars versions, and if you think that will ever come out originally on Blu-ray, or if you think it won't. Are you sure?
On DVD Tuesday once, I brought in all the versions of Star Wars I had before. I did a major purge a couple years ago of a ton of my possessions, and it was a giant stack of like this VHX box set that had this little signed letter from George Lucas, this one that had like a sleeve, it was like seven different times I had bought it. I'm telling you, it was twice that because I got rid of certain versions. But yeah, it's come out so many times, and Disney's looking to cash in. So yeah, I'd just be curious what fans think of this. Look, fans want the original theatrical version.
And I heard Disney's going to release them on Blu-ray. This is what I heard.
This is what you have heard on the internet.
Yeah.
Don't always trust the internet.
What?
Because you saw it on Reddit doesn't make it true.
Oh, Reddit. You got me again.
Yeah. So the official press release went out yesterday. There was a commercial that was run during whatever basketball game was happening yesterday. I forget what it was. And then it's coming out Friday, the movies. So there you are.
All right.
So nerds know where they're spending money this Friday. Last movie coming out this week is Lost River. Now, Ryan Gosling directed and wrote this film, and if you watch the trailer, it will make very little sense. And it really looks like Ryan Gosling went, you know what? I'm famous enough. I'm going to make a David Lynch movie. That's really what it felt like. It's got this weird kind of like intense, heavy drama. But then he's also weird, like, was that a dream sequence? Was that a fantasy sequence? Mm-hmm. How does this kind of play into everything? Like,
here's the description.
Okay.
A single mother is swept into a dark underworld while her teenage son discovers a road that leads him to a secret underwater town.
All right.
Do they breathe water in the underwater zone? Is Aquaman there?
So the mother gets into crime and he finds Atlantis.
Sure.
Is the submariner in it?
Here's the thing. When you get on this river in this underwater town, is take a right and then go watch Ex Machina. Ex Machina. However you pronounce
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. I love it. It's a movie.
That's a spicy movie.
That's a spicy river underworld. Oh, no. I like my robots and living in the woods.
Oh, my God. Wow. We've had quite a show.
Holy shit.
This is we didn't even get the site spotlight and fan feedback. We'll do it quick. Now, one of the things, if you go to the Facebook fan page, this was really cool. A fan, Lindsay Rose, there's a pic with her wearing a Comedy Film Nerds t-shirt standing next to Paul McCartney, which was really cool.
He's a Beatle.
Yeah.
He was at the Improv, and I was thinking about this, and I was like, I've been at that club when Seinfeld has popped in, Chris Rock, whatever. No one, who's more famous that could pop in there? Who's been that famous for that long?
Well, yes, and then also we know who Paul McCartney is, but there is a whole generation of people who do not. I think the internet proved that a couple weeks ago, right? When there was that whole situation where Paul McCartney played. It's like, oh, well, it's cool. You're promoting a new artist, this guy, Paul McCartney. Right? You saw that, right? Where kids on Twitter didn't know who Paul McCartney was.
Wow.
That was depressing.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know. I still think he's the most famous guy to ever go into the Improv.
I agree with you.
Most likely,
yeah. There's no, I mean,
not the funniest.
No. His set blew. I mean, a lot of hacky, a lot of.
Yeah, he was a guitar act.
He did a song parody of Hey Jude.
With guitars, I can't stand
him. Hey Jude, we get it.
So, and one of the things I want to tell you too about the site is definitely check out the message boards. They're working now. Definitely add to the conversation. And also, Neil's Going Clear review is great. And he even emailed me and said, am I too hard on Tom Cruise? Should I listen? And I'm like, you know what? Leave it as is.
As is, baby.
As is. It's fine. So,
what are they going to do? Shut us down?
Yeah. It would take 4 seconds, and that would be it. And a credit card and a Google helicopter. It'd be pretty easy. You know, if they're shutting down Film Threat.
Yeah, that'll happen. If I don't make my Kickstarter, it's gone, folks.
Yeah. So
it's going back in the vault.
check
it all
out.
That stuff gone. So
check out the Neil's review and the message boards, and remember, folks, you got to check out. It's only 2 weeks left. Make sure you help Chris out with the Kickstarter for Film Threat. Save Film Threat, and also to bring back DVD Tuesday.
DVD That's Tuesday.
It's true.
And he's going to give a special thing, and also shave your face.
Yeah, shave your face. Get a Harry's face.
Shave your man face. Well, that's our show, Chris. So one more time, tell the people where they can go to find this.
Yeah, just go to filmthreat.com. Check out all the you can one of the perks. We'll have a good perk on there. We'll have a good perk on there where you can be a guest on this show.
$1,000
on Comedy Film Nerds. And there are perks where you can be a guest on DVD Tuesday. So check that out. Just go to filmthreat.com, and you can also follow at filmthreat, or you can follow me at that Chris Gore. And thank you guys for having me on the show. It's always fun. I love just like
– love having you on it.
Well, it's fun because also like we're all passionate for movies, but also – you have a sense of humor.
Yes.
We have a sense of humor. Not everybody has a sense of humor. I've dealt with stuffed shirt critics for a while. They do not have the sense of humor that you guys have. It's refreshing to come on a podcast. It's not all seriousness. So I love it. So thank you so
awesome.
Much.
Awesome. Well, thank you. All right, that's our show. That's all we got.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing more LA Podfest announcements pretty soon. Uh-huh. We got a lot of big shows that we're going to be announcing soon, but tickets and hotel rooms are available right now. In fact, they're actually going. People are buying tickets, and which is just really, we appreciate that. We haven't even announced the entire lineup yet, and you guys are already, we're coming.
We tiered the hotel room, so you can still get in for $199 a night, which was last year's price, but you can also get bigger and more deluxe rooms as you go up, and they're all discounted.
And so it might be cheaper than to just split a room with somebody else if you
there's
get
suites
one.
For $299 a night,
right?
Those can sleep a bunch of people, so that might be your best way to go. So a lot of options, and you know, we're locking down shows and getting more sponsors, and it's gonna, you know, every year we're gonna make it a little bit better than the year before.
A little bigger than before.
Bigger.
One thing I have to announce is that I will be getting a hotel room during LA Podcast. You know, I'm just hoping to get on a show. But I think the first step is I need to get a suite for $299.
Yes.
And then just tell people that you're going to be there.
I'm going to be there. I'm going to be performing in suite number. The thing is you guys laugh. I'm going to do
a show up there.
I'm going to do the slam dance of LA Podfest, but it'll be in my suite, and it'll be all the podcasts that didn't get at LA Podfest. Cause I've had people come to me cause I've been a part of the, you guys have had me on panels, and you've had me do stuff, which I love, but I love that people come to me to try to get on the LA Podfest. I'm like, well, you should just talk to Chris and Graham. I'm not really the guy. I've done a couple things for them. I'm happy to do anything they ask. I'll do, but I'm not the guy, but I am going to be the guy that's going to start the anti-LA Podfest. Podfest Slam. Pod Slam is going to be in suite 1500 on the... there's badges. There's going to be everything that happens at LA Podfest is going to happen in that suite. Everything. It's going to be... I don't know. As dumb as it is to say this, it sounds like something stupid I would do.
Yeah.
As you guys have been you've participated in stupid things that I've done, like that weird award show I did one time.
That was great.
That was fun. It was fun. It was
the whole, awards over there.
It was basically to do a parody of an award show because there were all these awards for podcasts. I thought they were all bullshit. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do my own bullshit one. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you guys showed up and gave the best speech of the night, which was awesome. So thank you.
So come to Chris Gore's suite for his
Pod Slam
suite at Pod LA Slam. Podfest.
Oh, I'm writing it down so I don't forget.
All right. Well, that's our show. Thank you, Chris. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. As always, remember,
Han shot first
on Blu-ray.